In 1895, Wilbur and Orville Wright were young men working in the newspaper business. Maybe it was hearing their father, the Church of the Brethren bishop, preach about celestial skies. Nobody knows for sure why or how, but the two brothers became obsessed with making a machine that would fly. Some said it couldn't be done. Many people's dreams were inspired. On the shores of Kitty Hawk, the Wright brothers spent months at a time experimenting and failing. But after years of toil and trouble, in 1902, they successfully launched their first fully controlled aircraft. A year later, they attached a lightweight gasoline engine, which propelled the first airplane. On May 25, 1961, President John F. Kennedy announced to the world the dramatic goal of sending Americans to the moon. JFK said, "We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone." Some said it couldn't be done. Many people's dreams were inspired. For the next 8 years, thousands of people worked on the difficult challenge. And then on July 23rd of 69, two astronauts walked the moon while their buddy orbited out, waiting to come back and get them. A giant step for humankind. Serving as minister in El Paso, Texas, I had a big honor, and I came to know a man in the UU church there named Larry, who was a scientist who worked on the Apollo team. He was a trip. Larry was like a 75-year-old playboy when I met him. It's a whole other story. But he said the tireless dedication of those he worked with indelibly touched his life forever. He said, "Never forget the way everybody just leaned in." And as we know from recent movies, there have been unsung heroes who fought their way in against segregation to help. Soon thereafter, humanity set sights on Mars. And in 2004, the United States landed two slow-moving golf cart-sized rovers on opposite sides of Mars. One of them is on your cover. It was a mission that was meant to last 100 days. But one of the rovers, the one on your cover, named Opportunity, lasted 14 years. And last month, NASA declared it dead, they believe, due to a fierce windstorm that knocked it out. Couldn't get the battery operating back right. Opportunity roamed 28 miles and worked more than any other lander in the history of space exploration. Marcia Dunn reported for the Associated Press that Opportunity was a robotic geologist whose equipment helped discover evidence that ancient Mars had water flowing on its surface and might have been capable of sustaining life. Presidents Obama and Trump declared that the U.S. would send people to be on Mars by the year 2030. Many dreams are inspired, including, if you haven't seen her, check her out on YouTube. U.S. citizen 15-year-old Alyssa Carson is among the youth and adults who have set their life goals to be amongst the first to be on Mars, and they're training nonstop now. Look up Alyssa Carson. She is impressive. In the living of our lives, I think we all have some of the "it can't be done" attitude in us. And we all have inspired and inspiring dreams that we want to share with others so that we can lean in and help them come to fruition. We participate in the church to inspire dreams and help them come to fruition. We are very passionate about celebrating the miracles of life, the miracles we can too often ignore and take for granted. We are passionate about practicing spiritual well-being, resiliency, health. We are dedicated here to the core of our bones. If you're new and visiting, I'll tell you part of this place is being dedicated to our core, to trying to work with partners in the wider community to bend the arc of the universe towards justice. We're all in on giving what we got, even when we think we don't have much. Like we can trick ourselves, like the people in the beginning of the story that Ryan told. Some say we can't do it. You can't do this. You can't do that. But we will give everything we've got to build on the past and innovate our way into the future, trying to meet the challenge of achieving our goals. This congregation has been an aspirational dream ignited by beloved community since the beginning. The stories are tremendous. Going back to the early 1860s, when folks living in Germantown got tired of traveling all the way downtown to 21st and Chestnut to go to the Unitarian Church, they declared they would establish their own congregation. They constructed a gorgeous building designed by an abolitionist son at Chelten & Chew. Some had said it couldn't be done, but they had dreams that were ignited. In the 20s, they were landlocked and grew out of that space, and they said, you know what, we need a bigger place because more people want to be a part of this life-affirming, life-saving religion of which we're a part. So they got 6 acres of land at 6511 Lincoln Drive, and they built these buildings, which we are fortunate, blessed to be a part, to have. In the 50s and 60s, this part of the story is critical for us today, I believe, in the chaotic morass that our nation tends to be on a weekly basis. Think back. The 50s and 60s, the church had a vibrant ecumenical pulpit, which was progressive and radical for the time. They intentionally brought in a variety of speakers with a wide array of theological and social opinions. They had disagreeing preachers week in and week out because they trusted the people to think and hear and process and make good decisions for themselves in the community. If we have more of those circles of respect today, I think we can move forward better as a congregation, as a denomination, as a country. Let's hear each other and listen deeply, even when we disagree. It was happening in the 50s here. They brought in Hindu speakers to this pulpit in the 50s. That was radical. What can we do today to stretch ourselves? People were tired of racism for a long time around here. The congregation worked to be a part of fighting housing discrimination and redlining in the neighborhood. People in this church were part of moving the Northwest towards a better way of everyone being able to live together regardless of the pigmentation of their skin. People say, yeah, but you can't have that on Sunday morning in your church because Sunday morning is the most segregated time. You can't integrate a church. Well, it's been happening, and it happens, and it's enriching. I think the diversity that many people said can't happen, which has happening and is happening in this church, feeds our souls in contrast to the starvation we often feel in segregated life. In the 80s, Reverend Gardner, the minister, with the blessing of the congregation, began officiating same-gender union ceremonies in the sanctuary. It was radical. And today we are proudly, unequivocally pro gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender church. It is who we are. This is an affirming place. And we're moving forward with that tradition. This is a place for all, no matter who you love, no matter who you are. In the 70s, this is one that doesn't get talked about enough. The church and the denomination began to educate our children about sexuality. I'm 51 years old, and I took this when I was a teenager in Chicago. The goal, it used to be called About Your Sexuality, now it's Our Whole Lives, OWL. Give the teens all the accurate information we can about their bodies, sex, sexuality, so that the teens, they're going to get the information one way or another, and it could be healthy, it could be correct. We want to give them good information in a respectful environment so they can grow into making healthy and respectful decisions. And I guarantee you today that is a state-of-the-art program that people like Andrea Barcevic and others have been teaching for decades. Many religions, Planned Parenthood looks at it. I have a friend who's a psychologist in Cuenca, Ecuador, who's trying to develop programming like this for his communities in Cuenca because it's not been translated to Spanish yet. I guarantee you once OWL is translated to other languages, people will take it and use it immediately. But we've been doing it here for decades, and we're going to continue to do it. And there's OWL for adults as well. You can take sex class at church. Now, does it get any better than that? Seriously, run that by your coworker. Here, we're committed to being in it with our neighbors. We're one of the congregations that are members of the Power Interfaith Coalition. We're working to fight the immoral minimum wage of $7.25 in Pennsylvania. Poverty wage. We're part of a coalition trying to say, let's move it up to a living wage. We are part of a coalition working to fight against the prison industrial complex as it plays out in our city, in our state. We're fighting against cash bail bond. It's totally oppressive to poor people. There's no benefit to it in terms of recidivism or who comes back to face their charges. We're trying to do job training for returning citizens so they can get a good job and break old habits, take the pressure off so they can go to work and get a living pay and become productive members of society, coming back from being in jail in the most imprisoned country in the world. One of the richest, one of the most imprisoned. You figure it out. We're working on environmental justice with POWER to help people reduce their carbon footprints, but also to help, for example, stop the discriminatory habits like building a power plant in the Tioga neighborhood, which happens to be predominantly brown and poor. They didn't put the power plant in Chestnut Hill. We're trying to be a part of coalitions that lean in Kensington, not only rebuilding houses for people who need a hand to get their house back up to code and safe and comfortable, we do that, but also to know, yes, we want to be a part of solving the opioids crisis because it's devastating everywhere, especially in Kensington, but everywhere. And what I learned at rebuilding this year is opioids is not the only story in Kensington. I realized, oh, you were thinking Kensington, opioids. Kensington, no, we're down there meeting all these people living these full lives, and they said, Kensington is not just opioids. But this church helps us to do these things, to get out of the limitations we have if we just stay on our own. So I could go on and on, but I believe in this church, and many other people do too, and this is a time to invite you to think about what do you really think about the value of this church? What would happen if it didn't exist anymore? Efforts to invest in and invent the first self-propelled airplane send the first people to the moon, and send the Mars rover to the red planet. They all took tremendous dedication, work, and money. The efforts to build a beloved community with compassion, service, and empowerment, a place that has small group ministries where you can go and make deep spiritual friendships and talk about issues that matter in your life, does a lot of good work. It takes tremendous dedication, work, and money to run the church. Now listen, the good news is how much it costs to go to Mars and how much it costs to have USG, this is much more affordable. I know some people have problems with this, but this is every dollar, this is not a lot of dollars that it costs, although, you know, compared to going to Mars. Think of that deal you're getting around here today. As humans, we accumulate, spend, save, squander, lack, and worship money. Money is sex and money, complicated for the human brain. In my own life, in money, I'm constantly baffled and taken back how often I think something that is not enough. This can be talking about a time with a friend, or just not having enough time to get through my day, or money. Not having enough. I could be like that stone soup family, first door, nope, don't have it. And we know the irony is that the scarcity assumption often creates more of the scarcity we fear. But the opposite can happen as well. And I think that's what this place helps us with. Sarah Breathneck wrote a book entitled Simple Abundance, in which she says, spiritual law tells us, as we give, so shall we receive. We realize that money is a form of energy, and energy does not increase if it's hoarded. When we receive an increase of money in our lives through whatever mechanism, giving away a portion of that money keeps the channels of abundance circulating freely. So investing your money in the church opens channels of abundance in our lives, and it helps to make this life-affirming, life-saving project run. And I promise you, every dollar that's given to this church is spent with high levels of efficiency and integrity. I can talk to you about that as long as you want. This is a lean and mean budget. We will constantly explore, learn, and grow in how to live out our mission here. Building beloved community with compassion, service, and empowerment. It's a goal that will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone. Blessings be. Amen.